This is Audible.
Recorded Books and One Click Digital present After Dead, What Came Next in the World of Sookie Stackhouse by Charlaine Harris, narrated by Johanna Parker.
Coda material. After I began writing the final novel in the Sookie Stackhouse series, I was deluged by questions from readers who all wanted to know the same thing. How to find out what happened to a score of characters who couldn't make an appearance in the last book. It was obvious I couldn't fit all of the people in Bon Ton and its environs into Dead Ever After. So, in the interest of satisfying the readers who've been following Sookie's adventures for years, I herewith present my coda to the books that have dominated my professional life for over a decade. In alphabetical order. The ancient pythoness continues to be cared for by the vampires of Rhodes. The donors from the donor bureau who are sent to her have to be carefully briefed because giving her blood is terrifying and definitely unsexy. Greg and Christy Aubert continue to work at Greg's insurance agency, Pelican State. Greg, a natural witch, struggled with using his innate power to improve his business after he almost ran all the other insurance agents in Bon Ton into the ground. He underwent an intervention, telling the psychologist he was an alcoholic, to change his behavior. Not too surprisingly, the treatment didn't work too well. Greg finally managed to impress Greg Jr., who was watching from the garage one day when his dad reinflated a tire by pointing his finger at it. Lindsay, their daughter, sowed her wild oats and then settled down to teach tap and jazz to little girls in Clarice. She married a farmer. Connie Babcock, the deceitful secretary at Hervaux and Son, was not able to get a comparable job after she was fired. She ended up working as a guard at a correctional facility. The Ballinger family, Doak, Mindy, Bonnie, and Mason, are living happily in Mooney, Texas. Doak got laid off for a while, but he was called back to work before things got too tight. Mindy got a job working as a secretary at the high school, and she really enjoyed it. Mason had nightmares about the day of his uncle's wedding, but his parents talked to him a lot and sent him to a counselor, and he got through it. He became a manager at a mattress factory. Bonnie didn't remember that awful day. The wedding was picketed by protesters, but she became an activist for various social causes later in life. She was also the best veterinarian in West Texas. Christian Baruch was accused of unprofessional behavior at a meeting of the Vampire Hoteliers Association. He was never seen again. Batania and Clovash, the Britlingens. The Britlingen Collective continues its business of providing protection to whoever can pay for it, in several worlds. Batania thinks Clovash is the best partner she's ever had, and they've had many adventures, in many strange situations. So far, they've come out alive. Isabel Beaumont, Dallas vampire, racked up an impressive body count among the rebels responsible for killing her king, Stan. She still lives in Dallas and has become Joseph Velasquez's right hand. She never dates humans. Alcee and Barbara Beck went away for a vacation in Hawaii after the events of Dead Ever After. They returned after 2 weeks with some very interesting underwear and big smiles on their faces. Andy and Hallie Belfleur welcome their daughter, Caroline, 2 months after the events of Dead Ever After. Caroline was born with a heart defect, but after some surgery, she lived a relatively normal life for many years. They had 2 more children, sons, Jared and Clayton. Caroline's heart defect unexpectedly caused complications when she was a senior in high school, and Andy and Hallie buried her in her cheerleader uniform. Jared and Clayton both became lawyers, like their aunt, Portia Belfleur Vick. Terry and Jimmy Belfleur welcomed many litters of pups to their double wide, and 3 of the pups won prizes at Catahoula shows. 8 years after their marriage, the two died in a 2-car accident when they were returning from a grandchild's birthday party. Terry was sincerely mourned by Jimmy's children and grandchildren, and I gave a donation to the VA hospital in Shreveport in Terry's honor. It was earmarked for the treatment of prisoners of war. Bernard the Vampire, a great friend of Russell Edgington's, became an even better friend of Christopher Hauser, the Vampire King of Germany. Bernard was named Christopher's consort. He is unchangingly cute. Belenos the Elf was glad to be in Faerie with Dermot, and they go hunting together often. When Belenos found a lady elf to marry, Dermot gave him a handsome wedding present, a metal relief plaque embellished with the heads of everyone Belenos had killed. It has a place of honor above Belenos's hearth. Polly Blythe was fired from her position with the Fellowship of the Sun. She found a job as a public relations contact with a Pat Robertson-style ministry, but was fired from that, too, after she told a newscaster during an on-air interview that he was bound for hell. She's a telemarketer now. Jane Boathouse died 5 years after the end of Dead Ever After. She blacked out while she was sitting on the toilet and cracked her head against the edge of her sink. Marvin found her the next day. Marvin Boathouse never got married, but he also never took a drink. The vampire short-order cook, Anthony Bolivar, became a celebrity chef and appeared on the Food Channel several times. After he was arrested for picking up a prostitute and over-drinking from her, the Food Channel asked him to pack his knives. He began traveling again and occasionally takes a night shift at a restaurant. Maybe one near you. Lawyer Catherine Book is still an activist. She has to practice in night court, of course, but she's featured in magazines all the time as a poster woman for all that is good about vampires. Boom still works on the bomb squad in Rhodes. Shut away in Faerie forever, Dermot Brigand is extremely happy. He basks in his father's affection and has a very uncomplicated sex life. He is spell-free. Dylan Brigand had already disowned his remaining child by the time Claude escaped from Faerie. Dylan will spend a few hundred years keeping a low profile because he doesn't want to remind his father Niall that Claude tried to overthrow his government. Niall will spend a few centuries suspecting that there are plots against him because of this incident, and lots of the Fae will suffer for Claude's misbehavior. Every now and then, Niall will send Sookie a letter via Rosebush. Amelia Broadway had a son with Bob. After many arguments over what to do with her father's business and money after it was declared legally dead, Bob wanted to give it to charity. The couple split up, but they shared custody of their son Felix until he was 18. Amelia sold her father's business to a large chain, invested the proceeds, and used her witch skills to play the stock market. She amassed a huge amount of money and married her banker. Felix became an animal wrangler for the film industry, specializing in big cats. See Bob Jessup. Bubba continued to be passed from vampire kingdom to vampire kingdom, but while he was in Tennessee, he escaped from his minder to visit his gravesite, causing a near riot. After that, the Vampire Council censured Tennessee and ruled that Bubba couldn't enter the state for 50 years. He is in Canada now. He hates the winters. Callisto drifted over to the Middle East, where she caused dreadful bloodshed, but went unnoticed. Wright's Porter Carpenter took special courses to become an expert in crowd control. He got the job of police chief of Arlington, and next he was hired by Fort Worth. Desmond Catalyades remained a friend to Sookie, developing a habit of dropping in before Christmas every year. His children didn't approve of his attachment to a human, but in view of what happened when their father was unhappy, they never spoke to him about it. Mr. Catalyades declared New Orleans a devil-free zone, and he enforced that doctrine vigorously. He continues to practice law. Charlie, Heidi the Vampire's human son, died of his addiction within 2 years of her moving to Louisiana. Charles Clausen finally found a nice lady were-owl to nest with. Hank Clearwater contracted gonorrhea. The three vampires who moved to Area 5 after Katrina, Parker Coburn, Palomino, and Rubio Hermosa, lived together for 57 years. Parker left Louisiana for Las Vegas, where he worked as a flunky for Felipe. He's looking for two more congenial vampires to nest with. See Palomino and Rubio Hermosa. Bill Compton developed a warm relationship with Karen the Slaughterer. He built a secret daybed for her on the second floor of the Compton house. Though eventually their physical ardor abated, Bill was glad to have Karen's input when he began creating and producing violent vampire-themed video games. He recruited a stable of young computer-oriented men and women who agreed to work for Bill exclusively for 20 years in exchange for being brought over. Eventually, Bill had to add on to the Compton house to accommodate his nest. He became extremely rich and was featured in all the vampire magazines, and not a few human ones. He strolled across the cemetery to visit with Sookie from time to time. He always loved her. There was a surprising development made possible by all the money he earned from his computer empire. See Felipe de Castro. Detective Mike Coughlin was shot and killed in the line of duty when the Wendy's, where he was having lunch, was robbed. Detective Willie Cromwell was wounded in the same incident, but he recovered. He had to retire because of his injuries. Alfred Cumberland reached the pinnacle of his career when he photographed the marriage of Sheriff Pam to Heidi. Barmaid Cindy got another job at another vampire bar in Mississippi after being fired from Fantasia. But she made the same kind of trouble for a vampire who was less in the public eye than Eric, and she went for an unexpected and fatal swim in the Mississippi. Devon Dawn's appearance on The Best Dressed Vampire made her an overnight celebrity, but her 15 minutes of fame was over after a couple of months. She gladly went back to obscurity, though she dressed much better. Bud and Greta Dearborn enjoyed their retirement together in the harmony that marked their marriage. Bud had a stroke at 75 and never recovered, and 3 years later, Greta passed away in her sleep. The town renamed a street in Bud's honor, and the memorial scholarship started in Greta's name sent one of Terry Belfleur's step-grandchildren to college. King Felipe de Castro reigned over Arkansas, Nevada, and Louisiana for 30 more years. By that time, his kingdom had gotten too complicated and cumbersome for one vampire to run, so he sold Arkansas to his regent, Red Rita, who set up her own kingdom. After an earthquake damaged two of his casinos in Las Vegas, Felipe rebuilt them with the money he got from selling Louisiana. To Bill Compton, who made a great king, though he refused to move to New Orleans. Mark Duffy was struck on the head with a beer bottle in another barroom fight, and he died after 2 days of insisting he was fine. Tara's husband, J.B. Durone, kept his job at the health club in Clarice, rising to assistant manager since everyone helped him out. J.B. was beloved by his twins, who twisted him around their little fingers. And J.B. was also loved by strong-minded women, who were likewise able to talk J.B. into permitting liberties he ought not to have permitted. Tara put up with it as long as she could, but eventually she kicked him out. J.B. continued to have lady friends his whole life, and he married two or three of them, they insisted, but he never had any more children, and he never thought of anyone but Tara as his true wife. Still handsome, he passed away in his nursing home while he was having sex with an aide. Tara Thornton Durone raised her twins to be good citizens. She had to pick them up at the police station twice. After that, they calmed down. Tara remarried once for about 10 minutes. She built up Tara's togs and did a good amount of internet business. She moved into the storefront next to hers, and that became Tara's bridal and formal boutique, which eventually became a destination shop for brides in Louisiana. She arranged J.B.'s funeral service and cried a lot. Robert Thornton Durone and Sarah Sookie Durone were read the riot act by their aunt, Sookie, after their second trip to the police station. She described their mother's childhood in frank terms and told them how remarkably lucky they were to have a mom who'd overcome such odds, because she would need all that toughness to survive her twins. It was a wake-up call. Rob graduated from Louisiana Tech and began work for a state senator. Eventually, he became a senator himself. Sarah got a full scholarship to Tulane and became a speech therapist. Vampire Dustin finally learned the do's and don'ts of being a modern American vampire, and he wrote a monthly column for AVO, the website devoted to American vampires online. Emmanuel Ernest became the favorite hairdresser of a well-known rock band and toured with them until he went back to L.A. to found his own salon, Night Cuts. Russell Edgington is still the king of Mississippi. He still likes comely young men. FOTS sympathizer Helen Ellis married another FOTS member. Since they were bonded together by mutual hatreds, they had a bumpy marriage, and they were terrible parents. Aaron married Remy Savoy after dating him for a year. She was a loving mother to Hunter and bore Remy a little girl who could never get away with anything, given her half-brother's gift of telepathy. Octavia Fant lived with Lewis Chambers in a small house in New Orleans until a tree branch, broken by a violent storm, crashed down on the corner of their roof, which covered their bedroom. When Octavia's niece came to clean out the house, she decided to burn all the magic aids and accoutrements that Octavia and Lewis had accumulated. Amelia found out too late to rescue it all. Farrell still lives in the Dallas Nest and still dresses like a cowboy. Hoyt Fortenberry married Holly Cleary, who became pregnant on their honeymoon. In addition to stepson Cody, the two raised a son, Jason, and a daughter, Moonlight. Jason Fortenberry married Marie Stackhouse. Maxine Fortenberry and her silent husband, Ed, lived out their lives happily, taking care of their grandchildren. Arlene Fowler's children, Lisa and Kobe, were adopted by Brock and Chessie Johnson. Kobe became an independent filmmaker and shot a movie about his mother's death, which won awards but caused a lot of unhappiness in the bon ton community. Kobe had severe emotional issues for his whole short life. He died of an accidental drug overdose at 47. Lisa became a romance writer, and she married three times. Freda is still the queen of Oklahoma, and she has never regretted her bargain with Eric. Luna Garza became the face of Latina Two Natureds, and she lobbied for the rights of animal Americans until she was well into her 60s, when she retired to a ranch in New Mexico to raise chihuahuas. Danielle Gray lived with a couple of guys, but never quite made it to the altar again. Her daughter, Ashley, scored really well on her ACT and got a full ride at a community college. From there, she financed the rest of her college tuition by dancing at a gentleman's club, and she earned enough to become a nurse. Danielle's son, Mark Robert, worked for Walmart his whole life. Ginger Hart continued to pass bad checks until she spent 5 years in jail. After that, she reformed her ways. She lectures to high schools and Sunday school classes for a modest fee, and she works at a thrift store. Heidi's addicted son died in an alley, and Heidi stayed in Shreveport. She married Pam. They swap clothes and every now and then hunt for drug dealers. Heidi gained such a good reputation as a tracker that she helps the police hunt for missing people from time to time. Rubio Hermosa died in a freak construction accident in Baton Rouge, where he drifted after his nest broke up. Alcide Herveau finally stopped being foolish and impulsive where women were concerned. When his rogue werewolf lady turned out to be a poor match, he became interested in a surveyor who worked for one of his business rivals, a were-lynx named Callie Brown. Callie, a short, compact, no-nonsense kind of woman, kept Alcide in order for the rest of his life. She had five children with Alcide, and she went to work at Herveau and Son, which, after a period of time, became Herveau and Sons when the three boys started to work there. Of their two daughters, one became a beauty pageant contestant and eventually Miss Louisiana, and the other became a social worker. Alcide and Callie had 15 grandchildren. They both passed away at a very old age. Brenda Hesterman sold antiques in Shreveport even after the mysterious disappearance of her partner, Donald Calloway. She eventually retired to Florida. The goblin, Mr. Hobb, still works at Josephine's, Club Dead, in Jackson, Mississippi. Barry Horowitz, bellboy, spent 3 weeks with Sam's mom. He never went out after dark. When he was well enough, he got Bernadette to drive him to the airport, DFW, where he rented a car and started driving. He ended up in Seattle. He lay low there for a year or two. We may hear more about the rest of his life. Barmaid India drove up to Iowa with physical therapist Gwen Long to get legally married. They adopted a child, a baby boy with a cleft palate. He had a few surgeries, but now he's a handsome young man. India kept her job at Merlot's until she began working at a Denny's and eventually became the manager. She and Gwen had a few bumps in the road facing homophobia and racism, but they're still together. Their son is a hospital administrator. Indira eventually moved to New York to become part of the large Indian-American vampire group there. She joined an Indian dance troupe, and they perform at state fairs and Indian weddings. Isaiah is still the king of Kentucky. After his divorce from Amelia, Bob Jessup continued to work at the Coven's magic shop. The Coven put him in charge after 5 years, and he did a good job. He had a live-in companion for a long time, fellow witch Terencia Rodriguez, who helped Amelia at the ectoplasmic reconstruction until she died of breast cancer. He was very involved in son Felix's life, and while he admired Amelia's developing business acumen, Bob did not envy her. Bob had a witch funeral arranged by the Coven, and it was incredible. Brock and Chessie Johnson adopted Kobe and Lisa Fowler and raised them with a lot of love and a lot of financial struggle. Kenya Jones and Kevin Pryor went to church with wedding rings on one Sunday. Kevin's mother collapsed and said she couldn't breathe, but she recovered when Kenya offered mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. After a year or two, Mrs. Pryor and Kenya learned to tolerate each other, much to Kevin's relief. They never had children, but one of Kenya's nephews lived with them until he went to college. They always referred to him as their son. Kennedy Keyes cohabited with Danny Prideaux for 2 years, after which their differences drove them apart. Kennedy, no longer as controversial a figure as she had been when she walked into Merlot's, found a job at the casino in Shreveport, tending bar in a very abbreviated outfit. She married a businessman 20 years older than her, outlived him easily, and began raising and breeding bulldogs. She married her gardener when she was 60. Mustafa Khan joined the Longtooth Pack and was a member in good standing for 40 years. He took a job as Pam Ravenscroft's daytime man, and he also earned a little extra money as a bouncer at the casino. He and Warren stayed together until Mustafa's fatal motorcycle accident on an icy highway. FBI Special Agent Tom Letesta had the misfortune to be visiting the BVA in Washington when the FOTS made one of its last terroristic statements by bombing the building. He did not survive the explosion. Antoine Lebrun cooked at Merlot's for 5 more years, saving his money carefully. He opened a hamburger place close to the high school and called it the Hawk's Nest. It was instantly successful. He makes the best milkshakes in bon ton. He married one of Kenya's sisters. Maxwell Lee became the face of vampires in Shreveport, since Pam tended to say exactly what she was thinking with poor public relations results. The suave Maxwell gradually assumed more and more responsibilities after Bill Compton became king, until he became almost synonymous with Louisiana vampirism. He loved every minute of it, though he'd never admit it. Bev Levito was co-host of The Best Dressed Vamp until its cancellation, when she began to host America's Top Vampire Model. The Lyle family still lives in Wright, Texas. Angie, younger sister of Deidre Lyle Merlot, was so impressed by the power of prayer at the wedding of her sister that she became a Methodist minister. She's a church in Arkansas. Jared, Deidre's older brother, survived Afghanistan to become career army. Their parents, Mr. and Mrs. Lyle, became friends with Bernie Merlot and set an example for the community by making it clear she was welcome in their home. They have several grandchildren. They urged all of them to elope. Dr. Amy Ludwig went public with her clinic for the treatment of supernaturals. She has a huge problem with addicts breaking in to steal the exotic drugs they're sure she keeps around. She's hired the twin wares, Dixie and Dixon Mayhew, to guard the clinic at night. Sometimes they're in wolf form when they're on the job. Problem solved. Dahlia Lindley Chivers continues to live in the vampire nest in Rhodes, and she continues to have adventures. McKenna took over the everyday wear shop, Tara's Togs, when Tara Durone opened the wedding boutique next door. McKenna eventually married a cousin of Glenn Vick's. Sister Mendoza married her patrol partner, Tony Gonzalez. They still live in Wright, and they always get together with Sam and Sookie when they visit Sam's mom. Craig and Deidre Lyle Merlot became the subject of a television special about the difficulties of marrying into a family containing the shapeshifter gene, when mom's a dog. Their marriage barely survived the experience, but after Deidre graduated from nursing school and Craig advanced in the tech support department of a huge accounting firm, things calmed down. They presented Bernie with a granddaughter, not her first, 3 years later, and after that, they had triplet boys. Sam Merlot. See Sookie Stackhouse. Franklin Mott, despite being old and crafty, was hunted down in his daytime hiding place by a human woman he dumped. She succeeded in killing him, and by the time his friends rose that night, his house had been stripped of everything of value. Sarah Newland was the only remaining voice of the FOTS while she was in jail, but the interviews became few and far between. When she was finally released, only two FOTS diehards in their late 60s came to the prison to pick her up. She had contracted lupus while she was in prison, and eventually, her worsening symptoms going untreated, she perished. The FOTS presence at her funeral was exactly 10 diehards. Werepanther leader Calvin Norris and Tanya Grissom Norris remained married until Tanya made the mistake of yelling at a teen panther who'd knocked down their mailbox. Under the stress, the boy changed unexpectedly and killed Tanya with one blow. Though he went a little crazy after that. The coroner didn't know what to make of the body's condition, and no one was ever charged. The teen panther was shipped to another community, way out in Montana. Calvin was taken care of by the entire female population of Hotshot after that, in every possible way. He died with a house full of people around him, and he was content. His daughter, Terry Norris, backed by her mother, Mary Elizabeth, succeeded Calvin as the leader of the Hotshot Panthers. She was the first of a line of female leaders. Eric Northman threw himself into his role as Freda's consort. He was surprised to see that Quinn was planning the ceremony, but he played his part with great attention to detail. If his heart was not in it, no one knew it. After a couple of years, Eric became genuinely attached to Freda. There was a lot to admire in her. If Eric had moments when he regretted his choices, he concealed them from everyone. Not only was he proud, his survival depended on his acuity in protecting his vampire wife's back and furthering all her interests. As Freda trusted and relied on him more and more, Eric became too busy to have any inclination to pine for the past. Though, when Pam told him about a wedding in Bon Ton, he sat without speaking for a few minutes before asking for a picture of the bride. After Pam sent it, Eric looked at it for half an hour, and then tore it up and burned it. He uncovered a plot against Freda the year after that and demolished her enemies in a bloodbath that was spoken of with awe for another 50 years. He seemed happier after that. To celebrate their 25th anniversary, Freyda offered to release him from a second century of marriage, and he refused the gift without a second's pause. He asked only that he be allowed to create another child. When Freyda graciously agreed, she didn't put any conditions on her gift. But Eric wisely changed to young man instead of a woman this time, though he was a blue-eyed blonde. Togo Olympio continues to roam the Southwest. For years, he dropped in to visit Trish and stayed with her for a few happy days. Or weeks. As Trish got older, Togo's visits became longer, until one morning he woke to find she had passed. Togo left a note with her nearest neighbor and returned to his wanderings. Dell and Janice Herveau Phillips were divorced 3 years after Dell dissed Sookie and Jackson. Janice married a really nice barber named Corky, and they had a wonderful time after they opened a huge salon together. Lorinda Prescott continued to decorate her family home for every possible holiday, and she's featured in the Homes and Gardens section of the Bon Ton paper nearly every year. Preston Pardlow, his true fey name was Connor, was favored by Niall for many years. He was well known for his talent at gift-giving. Danny Prideaux was devastated after his breakup with Kennedy Keys, but he managed to console himself with hotshot's Terry Norris. After she'd had the obligatory two children with two different male panthers, she cleaved only unto Danny. She makes him leave hotshot every full moon when the panthers hunt together. Wright Ranch owner Trish Graham Pulaski, longtime lover of Togo Olympio, left all her property to the cause of abandoned animals. The SPCA and Wright was able to build a completely new facility, a no-kill shelter. Celia Pumphrey was very successful with a real estate career in Little Rock, but she never forgot Bill or forgave him for not loving her. She had a rather unhappy life. Quinn's sister, Franny Quinn, found her true love while she was waitressing, and they got married and stayed that way. She was relieved when her mother died and was glad to see her brother when he came to visit. She was just as glad to see him leave. John Quinn had many more adventures. Rasul was recalled from a spying job in Michigan by Felipe when he finally remembered where Victor had sent Rasul. By that time, Rasul was reluctant to leave, so Felipe swapped him for one of the Michigan vampires. Sheriff Pam Ravenscroft was a very successful manager for Fantasia and instituted such popular promotions as Wet Jock Night, Ladies Free Night, and Kiss a Vampire Night. The bar raked in money, and Pam got a big raise from Felipe, which enabled her to have the kind of dream wedding with Heidi that she was sure Heidi wanted. They both wore white dresses. Pam remained fond of Sookie and visited her every so often. Always by surprise. When Felipe sold off Arkansas, his regent there, Red Rita, bought it. Red Rita saw potential in the state that no one else had recognized, and she worked hard to turn Arkansas into a destination state for vampire vacations. It was uphill work, but she's making progress. Salome's episode on the History Channel, part of the series Undead History, Vampires Recall, was the highest-rated hour of the season. She did her side of the story about the Dance of the Seven Veils, and to everyone's delight, she recreated it. She had a great time. She even reenacted a minion bringing her the head of John the Baptist. When Sookie watched the episode, she thought the head looked a lot like that of the vampire Mickey. Hunter Savoy was delighted when his dad married Aaron, who didn't always understand him, but always loved him. Hunter had a very hard time during his teen years, but he was lucky enough to have his aunt Sookie to visit with and his cousins to play with, two of whom absolutely understood him. Hunter went into the military, and when his talents were discovered, despite his best efforts, he was added to an intelligence unit as an interrogator. His tremendous accuracy, without any brutality, made him one of the Army's best-kept secrets, and he was loaned to the UK for some special questioning sessions. When he retired from the military after he'd served 10 years, he had all kinds of medals and commendations, none of which he ever showed anyone. He had many adventures after that. Aaron and Remy Savoy had one more child, a girl, Hope, after they married. When the economic climate improved, the family moved to Shreveport, where Aaron worked for Home Depot and Remy as a carpenter for a home builder. As Remy reached 50, he developed rheumatoid arthritis and gradually became unable to work. Aaron was a little bitter at having to support the family, but their church was a big help, and she gradually became reconciled to his condition. Walking became difficult for Remy, and he was in a lot of pain. It was almost a relief when he caught pneumonia and passed away 2 days later. Aaron remarried within 18 months and had a happy second marriage. Michelle Schubert. See Jason Stackhouse. TV host and vampire Todd Seabrook was totally freaked out after his throat was torn out on national television. He never recovered from the incident. Sure, he looked weak in the eyes of American vampires after the incident. He stuck with the best-dressed vamp for the rest of the season, but then he retired to live by himself in a mountain valley in Colorado, where he fed on sheep and whatever other game he could hunt. Delia Shurtleff continued to run contractor Randall Shurtleff's life until they both went into an assisted living center. The only person who seemed to mind was his first wife, Mary Helen, who continued to plague them until her three children put her into a different nursing home, miles away. Everett Odell Smith graduated from Tulane, and with a high recommendation from Mr. Cataliades, he was hired at a prestigious investment firm in New Orleans. Everett worked his way up through the ranks, slowly but steadily, finally achieving a partnership. He married late and wisely, and had one daughter who could afford to work for a nonprofit charity to aid high-achieving kids from low-income families. Dr. Sontag married her diving instructor after a scuba vacation in Florida. Jason and Michelle Stackhouse had a surprisingly good marriage. To everyone's amazement, except Michelle's, he never cheated on her. Michelle stayed on at her ex-father-in-law's car dealership until she retired, though the dealership had long since passed into other hands. Jason kept his job with the parish. After miscarrying once, Michelle bore two children, Marie and Corbett. Marie was sweet-natured and telepathic, that damn essential spark, but not too bright, and the combination led to Marie's having many problems in school, though she inherited the Stackhouse good looks. Corbett, a year younger, spent a lot of his school years defending his sister. When she graduated from high school and started working at a dog food factory, it was a big relief for Corbett, who got a football scholarship to go to college. Sadly, bitten werepanther Jason suddenly collapsed and died while he was in his parish truck supervising a work crew at age 55. Michelle said being married twice was enough for her, and she never tried it again. Marie had a baby out of wedlock who was 2 years old when Marie married Jason Fortenberry, who was no rocket scientist himself. Corbett hit the marriage jackpot with the daughter of a very rich lawyer. Corbett became a private investigator, working almost exclusively for his father-in-law's firm, though he did some divorce work to pay the bills. Sam Merlot and Sookie Stackhouse were married in December, but a year later than Sookie had imagined. They really did take their time, and by their wedding day, they were as sure as any two people could be that they were suited to each other. The entire Merlot family attended the wedding, and of course Jason and Michelle, Remy and Aaron and Hunter, Alcide Herveau, Mustafa Khan and Warren, Hoyt and Holly, and many other friends from Bonton and Wright. Though Sam had attended the Fundamentalist Church in Clarice for a few months, they opted for Sookie's Methodist Church for the wedding and attended it thereafter, though not every Sunday. They discussed having the wedding at night so their vampire acquaintances could attend, but instead chose to have it in the day. Pam threw them a party at Fantasia on a night soon afterward. Weirdly, it was Thalia's idea. Sookie wore white because it was traditional and she looked good in white. What with her tan and all. Sam wore a suit. Sam's brother Craig was his best man, and Tara was Sookie's matron of honor. Sookie was startled to get a wedding gift from Eric, a very expensive and very impersonal silver flatware setting for 12, in a simple and elegant design. It took her an hour to write a thank you note. Pam delivered the gift, at the same time requesting that Sookie wear her wedding dress to the vampire reception at Fantasia. Palomino took several shots at the reception, and Sookie was sure they were intended for Eric. Sookie was quite proud of her silver service and hauled it out on holidays for years. One morning before the wedding, Sookie found a rose blooming in her backyard, in December, with an envelope attached. Niall gave the couple an invitation to the Summerlands when they went through the human veil, as Niall put it. They put that in their lockbox at the bank. Sookie and Sam had 4 children, the last being a complete surprise to them. Neil and Jennings came first, followed by Adele and their bonus baby, Jillian Tara. Though comfortable financially, Sookie and Sam wanted to be sure they could put 4 kids through college, so they started renting the bar for wedding receptions, and with Antoine's successor's help, they began to cater for parties. All 4 of the kids worked as teenagers, since Sookie was determined they'd all learn how to be self-sufficient. This led to some yelling matches with the girls, especially when their mom's rare but impressive temper came into play. Jennings, to Sookie's dismay, inherited the family disability. Mr. Cataliades showed up after each birth, though Sookie certainly never told him she'd had a baby. He did tell Sookie that after this generation, his favor to his friend was exhausted, and Sookie said, "Thank God." At least Jennings, Marie, and the somewhat older Hunter had each other to talk to and commiserate with, though it was impossible for them to play games together. All the Murlot children grew up tolerant, since they all knew their dad was a shapeshifter and Uncle Jason a werepanther. The children also learned to accept vampires, but to remain very wary in their presence. They thought Aunt Pam was hysterically funny. Go figure. Sookie and Sam are happier than many other couples because they talk about their feelings, and they're great with compromise. Sam looks a little tense when Eric is on television, and for a while he wasn't too happy when Bill came over to visit, but gradually he became secure in Sookie's love and loyalty. They're still thinking about Niall's offer, but not too seriously. Vampire Thalia had such a fan following that she finally refused to come to Fantasia any longer because people wanted to talk to her and have their pictures made with her. Bill taught her how to blog. Thalia's Thoughts was a huge success in internet terms, and Thalia actually enjoyed writing about how inconsistent and ridiculous humans are. She was asked to endorse high-end security systems and an online dating club for opinionated supernaturals. She enjoyed testing the security systems, but her dates had a way of vanishing. David and Genevieve Thrash finally tracked down Sookie after she warned them in time for them to escape disaster at Sophie Ann's party house in New Orleans. After they reconnected with her, there were never any problems with Merlot's state licenses. The were-tiger, Tycherine, raised her son with Quinn until tragedy intervened. The weather witch, Julian Trout, disappeared from Channel 7 in Rhodes and the supernatural scene with his wife Olive, following his realization that he could have saved lives in New Orleans by predicting the severity of Katrina. If anyone besides supernaturals would have listened to him. It took years for Trout to come to terms with his conscience. After that, he got a job at the Weather Channel. He does his best to avert disasters. Judith Vardamon continued to drop in on Bill every 10 years or so to see how he was doing. Sadly, he never found it in himself to return her affection. Texas vampire Joseph Velasquez kept his position as King of Texas for the next 200 years. He never trusted a human telepath again. Glenn and Portia Belfleur Vick had a son, Matthew, who was a total nerd and proud of it. He inherited his dad's skill with numbers and his mother's calm perseverance, and he became a lawyer with a practice focusing on estate planning. When he was in his mid-30s, he married a very nice interior decorator named Jonathan. Warren, see Mustafa Khan. FBI agent Sarah Weiss resigned in the year following her shooting. She became a follower of all things supernatural. Her husband and sons don't know what to make of this development, and Sarah grew more and more despondent as they drifted farther apart. She got a job as a firearms instructor at a local gun range and finally began to put her life back together. Teenager Kiana Wong drifted down to New Orleans the year she turned 20 with the vague plan of making a living as a psychic. That plan didn't work out very well for a long time, and Kiana turned tricks for a while, though the intimate contact was torture to her. Eventually, an older and less genuine psychic spotted Kiana as the real deal and took her in to show her the ropes. After that, Kiana was able to make a living, though a precarious one, and she eventually married a musician.
The End. You've been listening to After Dead, What Came Next in the World of Suki Stackhouse by Charlaine Harris, narrated by Johanna Parker. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends Dark Walker, a Nicolas Lenoir novel by E. L. Tettenser, narrated by John Curlis. Once a legendary police inspector, Nicolas Lenoir is now a disillusioned and broken man who spends his days going through the motions and his evenings drinking away the nightmares of his past. 10 years ago, Lenoir barely escaped the grasp of the Dark Walker, a vengeful spirit who demands a terrible toll on those who have offended the dead. But the Dark Walker doesn't give up on his prey so easily, and Lenoir has always known his debt would come due one day. When Lenoir is assigned to a disturbing new case, he treats the job with his usual apathy until his best informant, a street-savvy orphan, is kidnapped. Desperate to find his young friend before the worst befalls him, Lenoir will do anything to catch the monster responsible for the crimes, even if it means walking willingly into the arms of his own doom. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more, so look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.